people struggle with patience because mainly most people are insecure. They worry about what other people think about them. So they're rat racing quick to get the paper so they can buy something to impress people they don't even like. And I'm trying to change that narrative.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Melbourne, what's good?
Thanks for coming out, Gary.
Thanks for having me.
Your parents have both had a massive influence on your life. Can you speak about both of them and how they've kind of shaped you and stuff?
My parents are very different, but obviously have a lot of similarities. I think my mom just deeply overloved me, you know, in a way that's just profound to me in hindsight. I just thought I could do anything. I thought I was capable of anything. I was, you know, purely loved. But she did a great job. She held me accountable. I was a terrible student. I got punished and grounded. So she loved me, but she didn't love me in a way that made me think that there weren't consequences. I think modern parenting struggles because we don't hold kids accountable. And so she found that balance. My dad scared the shit out of me my whole life, even though he didn't do anything about it, like meaning he never did anything to do it. It was just my mom used him as the bad cop. Plus my dad has these weird eyebrows where they're always mean. Like, so that was scary. But my dad was huge because when I was 14 and I joined the family liquor store business, he really taught me some great principles, especially like your word is your bond. He's a very honorable businessman. If you say something, you do it. And he really rounded me out at a time where by 14, I really had the gift of gab and I could sell shit. And to me, the only thing that I cared about was selling the thing, the lemonade, the sports card. And I think my dad caught me at a good time and really taught me good principles. And so I was very fortunate. I am very fortunate. My parents were 22 and 20 when they had me. So we're not, you know, once you become like 30 or 20, even 20, you're kind of in the same general ballpark. So I have a great friendship with them, but it's none of this modern shit. Like my parents are my parents. You know, one of the reasons I'm comfortable being so out and about everything I do, but including my accomplishments, is I actually am not very attached to my success. When I hear that video that just went up, like, you're this, you're a marketing genius, everything I hear, I'm like, that's for my parents, that's my parents. Like, they built me. I'm the product of them. So I'm very proud to make them proud, and it's a very big currency in my body.
How do you react to your success today? How does it make you feel proud? Like, how do you react to the success?
How do I what, my friend?
React.
I don't think being a good businessman deserves any different treatment than any other person. I'm extremely uncomfortable when people give me credit for normal shit. Like, there was some guy in the airport in SF in San Francisco on the way here. I met him, took a photo, we talked. And he's like, man, you're really nice. That's fucking amazing. And I know what he's saying and I get it. And I don't feel comfortable in that. I feel like money and fame and success don't change you. I think they expose you. And so I'm detached from it, brother. Like, I'm proud of it. I've worked very hard. Nothing, I love when people are like, you're lucky. I'm like, you know nothing about me. Like, I'm very proud of my success. But I give a lot of credit to my parents. I give a lot of credit to the circumstance. And I definitely don't feel like it makes me special. I'm humbled by the attention. I'm humbled. I mean, do you know what this feels like? Like, when you go to the complete other side of the world and many people want to come and interact and consume your, like, this is humbling. I appreciate it. I really have a lot of love for all of you. Thank you for being here. But to answer your question in a different way, and then we'll move on. I'm gonna die one day. Maybe I'll get some good action for 24 hours on whatever the way we communicate digitally those days, and then everyone's gonna move on with their life. And I think being grounded in that humility and understanding that even if you accomplish special things, the world will move on the day after you're gone, I think is actually very liberating for me. And that's how I think about my success.
When you were building Wine Library at the start, did you ever know you were gonna make VaynerMedia, or was that kind of just later on thing?
I feel like very early on, only thing I thought about was I'm gonna build a big company for my parents because I love them. I didn't even think about myself. And probably until my late 20s, early 30s, when the company got really big and my dad was still paying me nothing, I was like, this might be a little fucked up. You know, when I tell kids to be patient, like I worked 15 hours a day, 6.5 days a week for 10 straight years, and my dad never paid me more than $70,000 a year, and I built the company from 3 to 70 million. So I would have been way better off getting a job somewhere else. They would have paid me a lot for doing that. But I was 34 years old. I started VaynerMedia with my brother AJ, and we had so little money, because I got so little money, though I had some savings, but I had just invested in Facebook and Twitter. I bet the farm on it. We started VaynerMedia in the conference room of another company because we couldn't even pay rent. And I was 34 years old. You know, when I was 30, how many people here are under the age of 30? Raise your hands. Like, when I was 32, I was stocking shelves in a liquor store. So you can imagine when 26-year-olds come up to me and they're like, oh, I'm fucking finished. I'm like, motherfucker, you haven't started. So people struggle with patience because mainly most people are insecure. They worry about what other people think about them. So they're rat racing quick to get the paper so they can buy something to impress people they don't even like. And I'm trying to change that narrative.
And for the people that are kind of starting from scratch, how did you get the first clients in VaynerMedia? What was the process to get the first ones on?
Well, the reality was I really believe in asking. Like, you know, you can just ask, like, especially today. Like, if people are just starting and they need a customer, you post content and you DM people. Like, when people are always like, Gary, I can't get a customer. I'm like, how many people did you hit up on LinkedIn? How many people did you cold email? And how many people did you cold DM yesterday? The answer is always nothing. And in reality, like, for me, it's just like, why, if you want something, why aren't you not asking? You don't want to be annoying, you don't want to be a spam bot, but if you don't ask, you don't get. And so, you know, for me, it was asking. I mean, mine came a little bit different because I was already starting to build brand, and there was definitely people coming to me, but, you know, the reality is it's just very easy to ask in today's environment. I still believe for most people, putting proper content on LinkedIn, speaking about your expertise and or passion leads to an incredible amount of business opportunities. And most youngsters don't even think about LinkedIn because it's a TikTok, Instagram world. And I highly recommend this room get way more serious about LinkedIn content because the opportunities of business development are extremely strong there. Even if you're selling a fitness app or t-shirts or banana pudding, like, it's not a B2B environment. It's B2B environment, but it has people in it and people buy banana pudding.
So what about, so when people see you do so much content, how you speak, it can almost be overwhelming if we aren't great at communicating.
Yes.
So for that kind of entrepreneur, what should they, how should they go about it?
Well, maybe you shouldn't be communicating in video form. So, I mean, there's a lot of you that I've seen your videos. You really should not be doing video. But you might be great at writing. Like, the written word is dominating. Like, you could take a photo of something and then write a fucking 3-paragraph banger and accomplish the same thing I can by speaking. Or maybe the camera throws you off, but you are a good speaker, and maybe you should be using the Memos app on your phone and then putting that over an image. So there's many different ways to communicate. Or maybe you can't do any of them. You can't speak on video, and you can't write. Then you get a partner who can. There's always an answer. But I love when people are like, Gary, but I can't communicate. This is fucked up. I'm like, well, I can't play basketball. And I'm not saying it's fucked up that nobody's paying me $40 million a year to play basketball. Like, there is no fucked up. There's merit. If you're not good at something, you shouldn't be compensated for it. And the reason there was so many laughters that I brought, let me give you the insight. We are living in the greatest era of entitlement in human history. The reason everyone just laughed earlier and clapped now is something happened. Let me tell you what it's called. Prosperity. it's been so good for so long in Australia and America and Europe and all these parts of the world. Of course, not for every person, of course, but the net. And so for some reason, people just think because they're breathing air, shit should happen. That goes into parenting. For a lot of parents here, they don't realize paying for their kids' lives is fucking it up. If you're a parent in here and your child is over the age of 22 years old and you give them money, bad things are happening.
When it comes to building a bigger business, so many people have almost a money mindset and they're not deserving of a certain amount of money. For you, has money mindset been an issue at all, or has it just been like a byproduct of your
byproduct? Yeah, I mean, money's good and all, like I understand what it is. As a kid, I really thought one day I'd really like to make $100,000 a year. I had a number, you know, I got there and, you know, really, you know, look, I think it's tough to be like, you know, every time I post content, and I post a lot of this content about the money thing versus the happiness thing, people lose their mind. They're so mad at me. They're like, fuck you, sure, you can say it, because you're, like, I get it. It's just, the problem is I just know way too many people with money that are miserable. You know, and so, you know, for me, I got very lucky. And this is where luck comes in for sure. I love business. I did it as a kid. When I was 5 and 6 and 7, and it's the summer, the most fun thing for me was to sell lemonade or wash people's cars. Like, I like the game. I also think, similar to, we're living in a great era of entitlement, we're living in an era where people have put entrepreneurship on a pedestal and a lot of people are forcing themselves to be entrepreneurs when they're not. Let me remind a lot of you in here as you go through your journey, the number 6 at Facebook and the number 12 at Slack and the number 17 at Uber made a lot more money than the number 1 in 99% of companies. You have to be, self-awareness is what leads to happiness. Not everybody should be an entrepreneur. It takes a real stomach to be an entrepreneur. It sucks to be an entrepreneur. Everything's your fault. Everything's on you. Like, I wake up and people are like, what's your morning routine? I'm like, I wake up and look at my phone to make sure the world's not on fire. Because my Singapore office is open and Australia's open. Like, it's constant anxiety. You gotta like it for it not to be anxiety, but if you don't like it and you were not built for it, it fucking is the worst. And I watch entrepreneurship eat up people every day. Even the babies now.
Your message has kind of changed a lot since, like, the Joe Rogan podcast days to more recent podcast interviews. What do you think has been the biggest switch in you personally over the last 6-7 years?
To me, I'm a reverse engineer of what I think is valuable to talk about. You know, like, if you talk to my friends or the people that know me best, like, I'm in the same pocket. You know, in 2009, when the economy was melted in 2008, and the internet was starting to hit this scale, it was important for me to talk about the opportunities after work. Like, of course I'm gonna talk about what's available to people from 7 to midnight, when 99% of the emails and DMs I'm getting is, I lost my job, what do I do? Right? Now, I talk a lot about mindset, because 15 years ago, I didn't get emails about anxiety and depression. Now every DM I get is that. So you start thinking about different things. I didn't talk about entitlement. You think I said that thing earlier about if you're paying for your kid's life at 22 is to razz people? I'm not here to razz, I'm here to give love. I'm saying that because the number one thing I see that people are struggling with is when they think their parents don't think they're capable. And the number one way that kids think their parents don't think they're capable is they're paying for their life. Parents think they're doing something good, they're doing something bad. The kid believes that you don't think they can do it. And a lot of parents do it because they want to show other parents that their kid's okay and they're doing well when they're not. That really, you want to really fuck up a kid? Buy a BMW for them, not because you're buying a BMW for them, but because you want other people to think they're doing well. But you and the kid both know they're not doing well. So, like, the biggest difference is society's different. I'm in the business of talking about things that I think can bring value. And so I'm following the conversation and then trying to bring value to the conversation from my perspective to the best of my abilities.
I right now, where is the conversation going? Is it towards AI or what's right now?
You know, I think there's a lot of conversation. I think AI is definitely in the conversation from a very technical standpoint. I think people are tired of the fighting. You know, I think there's a fatigue in people canceling each other. That's definitely a conversation. I think people are just tired of like the conflict. I think people are trying to find their niches. I think there's a little bit of, you know, generational warfare going on. The boomers versus Gen Z thing is fucking fascinating. But I think there's a little bit of that. I think boomers are shitting on Gen Z way too much, especially since they created them. I think Gen Z's shitting on boomers too much without realizing they haven't lived life yet, and it's really cool for you to tell everybody how to live, but you're 17, shut the fuck up. So there's some of those. Right? Like, yo, you should be doing this. I'm like, you were shitting your pants 5 minutes ago.
What's one of the biggest mindset shifts you've had to make over the last few years?
I had a real kryptonite in my happiness, which was a strength that ended up being my greatest weakness. I had to learn how to deliver candor to people that I love. My candor on stage right now is off the charts. When I'm not talking to anybody directly, this is all day. The second you are even shifting from acquaintance to friend, my ability to tell you things that I don't like started to disappear. If I love you, I had nothing to say. I was just gonna make it good for you. And so I really struggled with that. And it really led to a lot of resentment. When you can't articulate things to people, you start to resent. And that really caused me a lot of all my pain in my personal life and my professional life. The single reason I wrote 12 and a half was to talk about my inability to be candorous and to talk about this concept of kind candor, which has really worked for me and is working for a lot of people that are reading the book and understand the concept, which is you can deliver critical feedback or even something potentially that sounds negative. It was something I had to go through.
How did you start to improve that skill set? Is it active or how did you go about it?
The same way people go about getting into shape. You go to the gym begrudgingly the first time and you feel like shit and you can't do shit and it sucks and it's the worst. And then you just go back the next day and it's a little bit better. And then a year later, you're in the game. I started making myself uncomfortable. Once I realized it, because it was subconscious for so long, once it became conscious to me, I started to practice better. I just knew that I wasn't gonna be able to live a life where I had now become aware that I was bad at something and I was gonna sweep it under the rug. That would go against every way my chemicals work. And so I just started practicing.
What's the current state of personal branding in today's world, do you think? Some people say it's too saturated for their marketplace. How do they kind of stand out if that's their mentality?
Well, it's definitely not too saturated. Every day people are popping off. The reason people say it's too saturated is they're not good enough. I love when people are like, yo, here's my favorite DM. Yo, Gary V, I'm fucking shadow banned. It's not oversaturated, it's competitive. Because now more people know the game exists. You stand out by bringing value. The biggest thing I see every day is most people post from a selfish place. Follow me, like me, buy my shit. I think the easiest way to stand out is every single time I post something on social media, and this is real talk, the only thing I think is, why would this be good for anybody? It's why I never show any parts of my life that are not about, what value is a post that you see of somebody boarding a private plane? What's that doing for you? When I razz my friends about it, they're like, oh, it makes it aspirational. I'm like, for like three people. The other 4 billion people feel like shit. So I think that it's not saturated. I think there's more attention than ever. Yes, there's more competition. If you want to break out, you've got to ask yourself, why is it bringing value to people? Like, why is this post valuable? And I think all of us, if we opened our phones right now and went in the stream, you can see it as clear as day. The first 10 posts you look at, are not valuable for you, they're valuable for the other person, which is why most people aren't sustainable.
And what about the self-esteem to be able to be like, well, maybe, because many people think they're not good enough to post anything. So how's the mentality or mindset around self-esteem building that?
Well, now you're getting to the most interesting shit. I mean, I think that's a big deal. Like, self-esteem is everything to me. Like, I think parents' number one job in the world is to build non-delusional self-esteem in their children. 99% of us, the person that made you insecure is your mom or your dad. And that goes into some deep-ass shit. Which is why I'm so happy that the stigma of therapy is going away during this generation. Right? For all of us that are sitting here, every one of us that are sitting here right now, no matter the age, your parents lived in a world where no one talked about therapy. Or, you know, it just had crazy stigma. If you went to go see a psychiatrist, you were crazy. The fact that we are so fortunate to be living on Earth where that is now not the case is huge.
How does someone build the self-awareness to help, to kind of become more vulnerable with their team and with their staff members themselves?
Experience. I think the more things don't work out, the more you're like, what do I have to do to change? I mean, vulnerability is a superpower. And everybody thinks it's a weakness. It's a superpower. Like there's nobody on earth that's perfect. And I think people should lean into their vulnerability. And it's hard for alphas, male and women. But to answer your question directly, I think the reps. When you see your bullshit doesn't work 3, 4, 5 times in a row, you get to a crossroads where you have to make a decision. Am I gonna live in a delusional state with my own self, or do I want the success that I'm trying to achieve? And I think if you believe in the merit of the game, you start conforming to the truth instead of your own delusion.
And so now, what's the latest with V Friends? That you say you want to like build the next almost Disney? Have you always had that vision, or is it kind of coming recently?
I've had it for a long time. I you know, for the last 10, 15 years, I've wanted to buy an intellectual property. I thought it was going to be something like Scooby-Doo or the Smurfs, the Snorks, which was this weird Smurfs underwater in 1984. ALF was something I was trying to think about buying. So I was really hot on it for a while, and then when NFTs came out, I saw it as a platform to be able to launch an intellectual property. A year before COVID came out, I came up with this concept I started working on called Workplace Warriors, which are gonna be little toys to put on people's desks, because so many of the DMs that I was getting were coming from people upset at work. And I noticed at work, and I'm sure all of you know this in the offices, people have little toys on their desk or little statues. And I was like, if I make Patient Panda or Empathy Elephant, maybe when they're having a bad day, they look at it and it makes them feel better. And I was excited about building this toy brand. I dragged on a little while, COVID happened, that killed it, NFTs happened, and I kind of refurbished it, rebranded it as V-Friends, and built this universe. I now think of it as Pokemon meets Sesame Street. You know, there's a lot of like Pokemon to it because I'm very hot on competition. I like the V-Friends competing with each other. The card game that I've made, which is like a Magic the Gathering, Yu-Gi-Oh! Pokemon thing, is very based on this. But the Sesame Street part is, early on I called it Disney, but then as I got more educated on Jim Henson and what the purpose of Sesame Street is, it feels much more in tune to what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make these characters popular because I realize that I have been able to build an audience and I resonate with a lot of people, but there's a lot of people I don't resonate with. Many people here who went out of their way to be here today, which is very humbling, also have a friend or family member who thinks I fucking suck, right? And so I can't resonate with everyone, but V Friends can. And so through animation and movies and coloring books and toys and pajamas and backpacks and candy, I plan on building this property for the rest of my life.
What are some of the biggest mental traits that you have that you think has been the most important for your success?
Self-love. Nobody's been able to ever say anything that has veered me away from how I feel about myself ever for even a second. Now that doesn't, like, I think I make mistakes every day. I think I have bad days, I think I have bad weeks, I think I have bad traits. But I've never felt that I suck. Like, and nobody's been able to ever convince me that I'm bad. You know, and so that's been huge. Hard work. Like, tenacity matters. like if you're gonna build something real, like you're gonna have to put in the work. I love how people realize that in health and fitness, but then try to make pretend in business that there's some sort of system. Like, you know, there's no passive way to get muscles. I mean, I guess you could get fucking like ab implants, but like, and yet people keep thinking there's a shortcut. My favorite, bro, is all these fitness people that start businesses who all their fitness content is there's no shortcut for putting in the work in the gym and eating right, and you've got to eat properly and your protein ratio and you got to eat clean, and they go all the way there, but then right away they're looking for a shortcut in business. You know, and so I think tenacity, I think self-love, I think curiosity. Here's a big one for a lot of you that I don't think is talked enough about. I think a big reason I've succeeded in a lot of things that I see in others working is curiosity. Too many people say no. Watch this, no bullshit. Please, Melbourne, please don't bullshit me. It's okay, this is not like a Raz session. I just want you to raise your hand. If the first time you heard about AI, no way, that's bad, raise your hands. Raise it, high, higher. That I think about a lot. The actual point is there's almost, in my opinion, one of the great missteps of opportunity is being in the business of no. If all those people would attack the information of something new with at least maybe, I think that would be very fruitful for them in life. To me, no's and yeses should actually be met with maybe much more often, right? So like the same people that just raised their hand that said no to AI 20 years ago said no to cellular phones. You know, people said no to email. People said no to cell phones. How many people here had a BlackBerry? Raise your hands. Do you remember when the iPhone came out, how you were like, fuck that shit, I need my buttons? How many people here have a BlackBerry with buttons right now that they actively use? You know how many people here said they were never gonna be on social media? You know how many people in here said they were never gonna be on TikTok? I've always been in the business of maybe. I've learned a lot, including the 99% of things that end up being no, I learned by just going and exploring it, which helped me understand the yeses.
I want to circle back to self-love for a second. So you said no one else can really impact the way that you see yourself.
Yes.
For the people in the room that don't have that kind of self-esteem yet, how do you respond emotionally to a bad comment or a hater? How do they respond mentally?
I mean, the way I respond and the way that I would ask you to debate is I respond to those comments with empathy. Could you imagine being a human being that goes around the internet looking at people's videos and pictures and deciding to spend time to make them feel bad? I feel bad for them, brother. Because they're in pain. They're in a bad place. If you are in the business of tearing other people down, you are deeply unhappy inside. So, you know, the next time somebody comes on your page and says, you're stupid, you're ugly, you suck shit, don't feel bad for you, feel bad for them. Like, I've never spent a second trying to tear other people down, let alone going around the internet to find something to tear somebody down about. Like, you know, and I understand that if you don't have self-confidence, it's gonna trigger you. I think the more interesting question I've been debating for a decade is how do you build self-confidence? I think one of the fastest ways is to cut out people that are tearing down your confidence around you. I think the conversation that needs to be had is, are you willing to limit your time with family members who make you feel bad? Like, you know, I'm not telling people to stop talking to their mom, but if your mom is making you feel like shit and is constantly complaining and everything is bad, maybe you don't need to speak to her 3 times a day. We have to take on accountability and protect ourselves and decide what we're consuming. In life, you find what you're looking for. If you want to find good shit, you can literally open your phone right now and find unlimited good shit. People are like, the algorithm. I open my algorithm and it's like, man saves boy from the pond. Mom loves son. Happy is good. That's my algorithm. Like, your algorithm is exposing you, not trying to trick you. China's not trying to get you. You're paying attention to dumb shit.